Hey there, and welcome to the Marketing Genius Podcast, the show designed to teach you how to sell, how to build systems, create strategy, and of course, how to become a marketing genius. What's up, everybody? Grant Wise here. Welcome to the Marketing Genius Podcast. I am pumped today to be tuned in with the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Michael Hellickson. He's one of the coaches at Club Wealth Coaching. This guy has a resume as long as your CVS receipt and is just packed of amazing things that he's done to grow and to help other people grow. So, dude, Michael, thank you so much for jumping on here today.
Great. It's a total honor to be here. That is hilarious. The longer than your CVS receipt. I like that.
I was thinking of something. I was like, oh, crap, I'm going down this path. I got to think of something. What can I say? So
that's hilarious.
Dude, you guys are killing it. How's everything been going?
It's been great. I mean, let me stop. I don't want to be the Facebook guy, right? Like, I don't want to be, you know, Facebook reality. I mean, things are going great. We go through challenges and struggles like anybody else does. You know, our company has had its ups and downs, but the reality is, on balance, it's been phenomenal. We're very blessed, and we're very happy with where we're headed.
That's awesome. So let's just kind of dive right into this. Who is Michael Hellickson? How on earth did you get to where you are today?
By having a lot of the right people around me that cared enough to help me get there, and that were willing to work hard enough for it, I guess is probably the best answer. Not least among them is my wife, who's worked with me for over 20 years now.
Good man.
Well, I mean, the truth, and that's not lip service either. I mean, truly, she's literally worked with, you know, she and I have been working together for over 20 years, actually for about almost 25 years. And for 20 of those years, we've been married. So it's funny. I always tell people she worked for me for 4 years. Then we got married, and that's when I went to work for her.
Yes, exactly right.
But yeah, I mean, it really takes a lot of people, you know. And I'm a real believer in teams. I'm a real believer that, you know, as great as we all are as individuals, and I believe in, you know, exponential potential for people as individuals, but the reality is we all get further together, and you know, our story has been no different. You know, it's, you know, when we started selling, so I started selling in 1991, back when we had the big old fat paper books of listings, and we had a metal key, you know, that it wasn't even an electronic key back then. And, you know, most people are like, oh my gosh, this guy's a dinosaur. But the reality was a lot's changed since then. And, one thing that has not changed is, well, it's only gotten better and more pronounced, is the value of teams. So
that's awesome. I love it. You guys spend a lot of your time coaching with teams too. Is that right?
We do. You know, and we coach individual agents as well. But you know, it's the name of the company is Club Wealth Real Estate Coaching and Consulting, right? So it's not just like we're not the, you know, hey, how many calls did you make today? How many contacts? You know, that's not our thing. Our thing is, let's dive in and let's figure out what's working, what's not working. What, you know, where are the holes in your business? Let's identify those and let's show you how do we plug those holes and how do we help you get to that next level?
Yeah.
And a lot of times that comes down to building a team. So
awesome. I love it. So you gave me some ammo kind of before we jumped in this conversation. So my first question, I just got to ask this, how on earth did you guys list and sell 100 homes a month in the prime of you guys running your company? That's insane.
Yeah. And there were times when it was actually substantially more than that. It's interesting. We had 16 to 18 agents and then a whole bunch of admin team members. We usually had right around 30 to 32 admin team members at any given time. And what we figured out early on was, by, you know, that one, it's a lot less expensive to hire an admin team member than it is to hire an agent. And two, when it comes to details, they do a better job of it. And three, agents freaking hate it. So let's let them focus on being great agents and let's let everybody else focus on the stuff they don't love, you know, that the agents don't love. And so, yeah, we built this team up and it took us years. I mean, it wasn't overnight, right? It's funny because for me to go from, or, you know, I say for me, for our team to go from, you know, just my wife and I to 44 team members took us 10 years. What recently we had one of our coaching clients, Sheree Benjamin, when she came on board with us, it was her and an assistant. 2 years later, she has over 40 people on her team.
Wow.
So that we've figured out a lot of lessons along the way that allowed us to compress that learning curve and to compress that cycle of the Lone Ranger to actually building a real business and a real team and being able to get completely out of production. And Misty Brewton is another great example of that. Same story, right? In fact, almost exactly the same story as Sheree, where inside of 2 years, she went from herself and a part-time assistant to over 40 people on her team and completely out of production. So that said, during that time, getting to that production was really about everybody being able to focus on what they're best at. And the more we did that, the better everybody got at what they were great at. And it just became like this perpetual cycle of improvement. And all of a sudden, instead of doing one or two transactions a month, our agents were doing 5, 6, 7 transactions a month. We had buyer's agents doing 10. We had listing agents that, kid you not, were literally doing anywhere. The ones, the lower end, you know, my lower producers were doing 10 to 15 listings a month. The higher producers were doing 18 to 21 listings a month. So it's crazy, right? I mean, you think about this. Eagles don't flock with turkeys, right? Yes. So you get all these eagles together and they really feed on each other, right? Like the energy and the synergy, it's magical. I don't know how else to describe it.
So I have a question that I want to lead into, but I'm going to ask this one first. How do you go about finding the eagles? Do you build them? Or do you go find them? What are some ways to go find these eagles that you're speaking of?
So that's really two questions in one. And I'll answer the second one first. And that is, do you build them or do you find them? And for us, the answer is, by and large, we've built them. And I'll say that as well with coaching clients. We've had better success when someone comes to us and they're a tier two, right? So they're doing 25 to 75 transactions a year and they want to do 500. Cool. That is a perfect client for us because I know I can get them there. I can get them to 1,000 if they want to get to 1,000. But because they're at 25 to 75 right now, they're humble, they're teachable, they're coachable. They are willing to implement the things that we teach them. Partly because all of our coaches produce at a higher level than the people they coach, but more importantly, because where that person is at in their life is a very open and ready to receive place in life. So the other piece is, when it comes to these people, it's very, very hard to start off with a bunch of eagles. You know, people ask me all the time, like, well, Michael, I don't want to build a big team. I just want to have 7 rock stars that, you know, each do 7 to 10 transactions a month. And that's it. I don't want any more of that. Well, good luck with that. Like, wouldn't that be great? Right. Like, we'd all like it. Like, welcome to fantasy land. And so the reality is it doesn't look like that. What it looks like is a lot of freaking hard work along the way. And you're going to have people that come and go. You're going to hire people that are going to leave. And I don't care how much vetting you do. I don't care if you use the DISC profile or the KPA or any of these other programs out there that are designed to help you get just the perfect person. The reality is you're not going to find very many. First of all, you're not going to find any perfect person. Second of all, I don't care how much vetting you put them through. The reality is you never know what someone's going to do till they're on your team. Yeah. You never know if they're going to really be a good culture fit until they're on your team. You know a lot of times that they're not going to be, right? Like, you're going to eliminate some people through some of that stuff. But the reality is you're going to have to bring a lot of people on your team. You're going to have to go through some pain. You're going to have to vet some people. You know, there's going to be people that are going to leave and that are not going to leave well. And that's going to cause chaos. And there's going to be people that are going to cause damage to your culture. And you're going to have to repair it and fix it. And you're going to have to just keep working forward. And it's hard. But when you do that, you can really develop a team of people that care about one another, that work hard together, that enjoy success together, and that really do have each other's backs. And that's a magical thing. When you develop that on your team, it is truly, truly magical.
Absolutely. And you're so right about how hard it is. So I think building culture is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my entire life.
Yeah.
Other than no question. Having patience with my 2-year-old son.
Honestly, I think that's even easier than building the right culture.
Yeah, I think it is easier than building culture because I've definitely hit my head against the wall a million times singing.
Well, and you know, you hit benchmarks too, right? Yeah. Like, you get to a point, like when you have 2 or 3 employees, it's hard. When you know, when you get to where you've got 5 or 6 team members, all of a sudden now, if 2 of them leave, it's catastrophic, right? And you're freaking out and everybody's stressed out. And why did those 2 leave? And everybody starts the self-doubt and all the hard stuff, right? And then you get past that, you get up to 10 or 15 team members. And at that point, when 2 or 3 people leave, it's not the end of the world. It still hurts. It's not the end of the world. It's recoverable. Then you get to 25, you start getting into that 25 to 40 range and things really start to gel. And what I've noticed is beyond that, when you get into the 60 plus mark, or, you know, you get around that 60 team members mark, you know, 60 to 75, all of a sudden it gets hard again. And the reason it gets hard again is because you have little, I'm going to call them cliques, like little groups forming within the group of people who are kind of like-minded and have differing opinions. And sometimes their behavior patterns are different than the other people on the team. There may be just a little bit different culture develops there. And I'll tell you, that's a really painful time. That can be. Mm-hmm. I know most agents aren't going to get to 60, but the reality is some of you will. And you need to be aware that when you get to that point, it gets challenging.
I love it. So first question I ask you is, how do you do 100 deals a year, or 100 deals a month rather, plus? And yeah. I'm going to rephrase the question. I'm going to ask it to you again. How did you find 100 deals per month?
Oh, I love that question. Let me tell you why. Most people think it's about, I'm going to go find one or two lead sources that kick off 50 to 100 deals a month. Uh-huh. Nope. I had 25 lead sources that kicked off 4 transactions a month.
There we go.
And we worked them hard. And we also did a lot of brand marketing at that point in time. So we had, our brand was out there. Everybody knew who we were, for better or for worse. You know, there was, of course, haters out there. But there were a lot of fans and a lot of people who were in our corner. And so, yeah, it was for us, it was really, truly about finding a lot of lead sources that consistently kicked off a handful of transactions. Mm. And then really working your tail off to work those lead sources.
Next question. How do you go from 1 to 25 lead sources? Because it's kind of like going from 1 to 25 team members. How do you go from one lead source to the next, to the next? Everything that you just described around building a team is almost verbatim the exact same when it comes to finding these different lead sources. Right. You can get to 1 to 5. It's hard to get it figured out. You're managing cash flow. You're juggling certain things. And then getting to these certain points. So how did you find, and how did you develop these different lead sources to tune your volume in like that?
Here's the real problem that I think most agents face. Most agents, what they do is they go out and they get a couple of lead sources, and then they want to get this other lead source, and they think, you know, their friend says they're getting a 4 or 5 ROI on that lead source, and they look at their lead sources and they're like, well, I've got this one that's only a 3 ROI, so I'm going to get rid of that so I can get this other one. Huge mistake. Huge mistake. And I'll tell you why. For a number of reasons, right? Anything that's a 3 ROI or higher, that's good ROI, right? You can run a business on a 3x ROI. The problem is that when every time you bring a lead source on, you have to dial in that lead source. And that takes 2 to 3 months to really dial it in, to dial in the follow, you know, to not just the lead generation, but the follow-up and the conversion of those leads. Every lead source is a little bit different. You convert a realtor.com lead differently than you convert a Facebook lead. They are two very different types of leads. Same thing with a referral. You can get away with things with a referral that you cannot get away with an online lead. Mm-hmm. And so they're different processes. And also, you've got to make sure on the back end of that referral that you've got those systems dialed in to take care of the person that referred them to you. And so first and foremost, one of the things that we did was, when we found a lead source that would kick off a 3 ROI or higher, we kept it and we'd add to it. We didn't replace it. We added to it. So we weren't top grading the lead sources. We were just adding better and better ones all the time. And we had a threshold. And if they were below the threshold, they're out. If they're above it. And the other piece is, you've got to give it time. You've got to give it enough time to work. And most agents don't do that. You've got to take the time to really build the follow-up and the conversion systems to ensure that you're converting those leads at the highest level possible. And if it's online leads, and you can be 12 to 18 months before you really know what you're going to get out of that lead source. And most people, they need instant gratification. So you've got to be really careful about, you know, what lead sources do I put them in first? Then next, as you dial these lead sources in, and as you continually, you know, add more and more, there will be times when the market tightens up that your competitors will bail on lead sources. One of the things that we did really well was in 2007, you know, we were doing about 400 or 500 deals a year at that point, and which is great. But we knew there was another gear, and we wanted to shift into another gear. We didn't have a goal of, you know, oh, we're going to hit 1,000 or we're going to hit 3,000 or anything like that. That wasn't our goal. It just happened. But what we did know was we could do more. And right about that time, when the market kind of shut off, right, late 2007, all of our competitors, or whatever you want to call, I don't think they're competitors, but all the other agents in the area, the bigger agents in the area, started giving up their best lead sources because they weren't performing really well right then. But I couldn't get those lead sources for years because they were exclusive in a lot of cases. You know, like I couldn't get that zip code or that county and that whatever lead source. So I bought all of them. We just went in and we bought every single one of them. Yeah, we took a little hit in profitability for a while. But dude, let me tell you, we came out on the other end of that with every freaking lead source out there. So it didn't matter where you were or how you were coming into the real estate industry. Somehow you were coming into our funnel and you saw our stuff everywhere you went. And man, it took off like wildfire.
That is epic. It's almost like investing in the stock market when everything crashes, everybody's getting out, you jump in, you go full force. How do you prepare yourself for something like that? And it's more of a financially geared question and a mindset question. But
yes,
when you're looking at an opportunity like that, how do you prepare yourself to be able to seize like such an amazing opportunity like that?
Four words. You guys should write these down. Here's the four words. Live small, save big. I mean, really, that's what. What's that?
It's a simple concept. It's hard
it
to
really is.
Some, but yeah.
But that's really what it comes down to, right? I mean, let's call it what it is. The vast majority of us on this planet do not need more than $10,000 a month to live a good life, right? Unless you're in San Diego or someplace really expensive, by and large, you know, you can have a decent house, you can have a good life on 10 grand a month. You're golden. And even less. I mean, 10 grand's a lot for in a lot of places. So a lot of these people, as they start making more than that, what do? They go buy a fancy car. They go buy a bigger house. They go buy a boat. They go buy jet skis. They go buy vacations. They buy all this stuff. And what they don't do is they don't put away. And here's my favorite book on this topic is The Richest Man in Babylon by George Clausen.
Great book. Great book.
Right? Right. And he talks about not eating the children of your savings. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what needs to happen is you need to bring this in. And when you get this money coming in, a certain portion of that money needs to get reinvested into your business so that it will, so the children of your savings will create more kids, more money. And that's really what it's about. So just having that money sitting aside when that happens, like, you know, like right now we're doing that in the coaching world, right? Right now you got everybody and their brother. If you've got a pulse and a real estate license, you're probably trying to be a coach somewhere right now. Right. And not to criticize any of these coaches, and a lot of coaches out there don't even have a real estate license, right? And not to criticize any of these coaches, because there's some great coaches out there, but the reality is being a coach is a lot like being a real estate agent in terms of there's value in having a team, right? There's success in numbers. And if you're just the Lone Ranger coach, it's really hard to compete against like Club Wealth, where we've got 60 coaches and we've got all this momentum and all this stuff. It makes it really hard for that Lone Ranger coach. But what's even harder is, like right now, we're setting aside a bunch of money because when the market tightens up, if this guy's a real estate agent, guess what he's going to figure out he's got to do when the market tightens up? He's going to have to go sell real estate because he makes more money doing that than he does doing coaching. Mm-hmm. So he's going to have to go focus again on that, maybe set aside the efforts that he's doing in the coaching company, maybe drop some of the money he's spending in some other places to kind of rein it in. And what are we going to do? We're going to spend more. We're going to grow. That's a time to capture market share. And so we did that in 2007 to 2008. We really were in the real estate side. We're able to capture a ton of market share because everybody else was bailing off the lead sources like rats on a burning ship.
That's awesome. I love it. So moving into kind of the next segment of that conversation, you know, we talk about how to find 100 deals. We talk about how you manage 100 deals. How do you close 100 relationships every month? And questions more geared towards like how on earth, and you mentioned it a second ago, realtor.com leads are different than Facebook leads. And I couldn't agree more. How do you develop sales processes for these different lead sources and scale those relationships up to 100 plus a month?
So first of all, you do it one at a time. You don't try and do a whole bunch of them at once. You literally got to take it one lead source at a time and you got to dial that lead source in. You got to dial in the follow-up and the conversion for that lead source. Then you've got to implement policies and procedures around that lead source so that you literally have a checklist for every single thing that's got to happen in your business. Now we use Trello for that now. Freaking love it. It's a free product. You know, Grant, you probably have heard of it. You're probably using something more sophisticated than that, but Trello has been a great product for us for some of this. And we just have a checklist for every single thing. Now, if you've got a robust CRM, you can do that on the back of your CRM as well. But somewhere, somehow, there needs to be standardization in your process. Think of it like McDonald's. I can go to Tokyo and get the same cruddy food at Tokyo McDonald's as I can here at the Bonnie Lake McDonald's, right? And I say cruddy, I shouldn't say that. But I can get the same, you know, cheeseburger there that I can get here. It's going to taste the same. It's going to look the same. It's going to be handed to me the same. It just might have some Chinese or Japanese writing on it, right? But my point is your business has to be the same. So every single one of your clients needs to receive the exact same customer experience as the client before them and the client after them. And that means standardizing your processes. And that's hard. It's not easy. And it will take time and you will screw it up and it will cost you money every time you screw it up. And it will cost you some relationships because some people just aren't forgiving. And that just is what it is. You're going to have to become comfortable with that. In the meantime, what you also have to do is you have to get your team on board. So number one, you got to trust your team. You got to explain to them, look, you're going to do something that's going to cost us money. And that's okay. You're going to make a mistake and it's going to cost us a bunch of money. It's okay. It's fine. It's okay for you to fail, just like it's okay for me to fail, because that's how we learn. What I want, though, is I want you to be a decision maker, because if I got to make all the decision makers in the company or decisions in the company, we're all in trouble. Mm-hmm. So we got to empower the team, right? But then once we've empowered them, we got to trust them. We got to believe in them, and we got to make sure they know that we trust and believe in them. Then we've got to give them all the tools, technology, and support they need to do their jobs right. And then we got to get the freak out of their way. Just get completely out of their way and let them do their thing. And man, when you can accomplish that, magic really happens. When they can take ownership of that thing that they're responsible for, you'd be surprised that the right people will really rise to the occasion. They'll do a great job with it if you let them. But if they're afraid to make a decision because they think you're going to get on them, or they think that it's going to be out of alignment with what your expectations are, then they won't be able to shine in that role.
Yeah, man, I feel like this podcast could be 5 hours long, because I developed 16 questions just in the 30 seconds that you were talking there. How do you prevent yourself from getting burnt out on trust, right? You're talking about, you know, trusting people. And this is something we try to push on every director in this office. It's like, look, I trusted you to go out and make a ton of mistakes, and I forgave you when you did, right? I showed you some grace because I knew that you were learning. And a lot of people that I speak with in the real estate industry, they get burnt out on trust so fast. Like, I tried it and this happened and I just don't want to deal with that. Like, I'm going to stay in my lane and I'm going to do this over here, but I really want to go to the next level. Like, how do you prevent yourself from getting burnt out on trust?
Well, experience is a great teacher, right? And unfortunately it teaches us both good and bad lessons. And what you've experienced is, I poured myself into this person. I trusted them. I gave them, you know, grace when they made a mistake and it cost us money, and I still stuck with them. And then all of a sudden, you know, they get a job offer. You know, I do this for years. And then all of a sudden they get a job offer for $1 an hour more and they leave the company. And they don't leave well, and they, you know, and whatever. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's hard. There's no easy answer to how do I still trust the best in people, despite having been burned over and over and over again. And the more you do this, the more you're going to get burned, right? The harder you work and the more successful you are, the more people are going to burn you. Yeah. And people you thought you could trust. I had one recently that I really cared about this person. And I still care about him. Interestingly enough, I still care about this person. And they were destroying our company from within. And they were literally telling our clients to commit fraud and like bad stuff. And we had to fire this person, and it was devastating to the company. It cost us, you know, immediately it cost us 15 clients like that. It cost us several of our coaches. And it hurt personally. It really was hard personally, because I cared so much about this person, and this happened. And at the end of the day, you still have to come back to the next person and realize that there is a great person in them that wants to come out. You have to allow the room for that to happen. One of the phrases I always tell myself over and over again is, hey, look, we're all another squirrel trying to get a nut. Yeah. Right? Like, we're all just going through life trying to do the best we can. And I really do believe, by and large, most people are good people and have good intentions. Yeah. And I think if you really make that kind of your mantra and you really continue to believe in that, even when at times you have knuckleheads that make it really hard, I think you'd be all right.
Yeah. I love the Tony Robbins quote, people are not their actions.
Right.
You know, you got to understand that everybody in some form or fashion, whether it's twisted or not, has some type of good intent behind the things they want to do. They're trying to do something good. They're trying to escape pain of some cause, whatever that looks like, but people are not their actions. And when you're building a team, man, you're going to learn so much about yourself more, I think, than you are about building a team. But you can develop some patience and grace and just understanding. That's another great thing to really kind of pull in. You can build an empire for sure, but you can't do it alone. And that's a definitely
no, you can't. And if I could pick one word that I think just sums that whole, you know, like sums up what's the number one quality or trait that you've got to possess as a leader, I would say it's humility.
Oh yeah.
And the reason I say humility is because if you're humble, you understand that, you know, you need all these people to be successful. Without all these people, you're not successful.
Yeah.
You know, without each of them doing their part and without each of them doing the very best they can, you don't get the opportunity to be successful and be on stage or be on webinars or whatever the thing is, right? You know, and humility is a, it's a lot easier to say it than to have it and to do it and to practice it.
Yeah, it's one of those learned skill type things. It's, you've got to go through something. Sometimes you just have to get knocked out, and that's just part of it. Like,
that's me.
Yeah, I've had to get knocked out a few times, and then like, okay, all right, I got you.
Dude, I'm back. You are hitting the nail on the head. Like, I go through cycles. I don't know about you, but for whatever reason, like, you know what they say, those who do not learn from the past are condemned to repeat it. Well, apparently I'm a slow learner because I literally, you know, I've had to get beat up and just knocked down and slapped in the face by life over and over and over again to take that step back. Cause I'm a high D right on the disc profile. So I'm just a hard charge, you know, we're going to be successful. We're going to go make it. We're going to run up this mountain. We're going to win. Right. And it just, that's fine at times, but I forget about people at times along the way. And I don't treat everybody in my life the way I should at all times. And sometimes it smacks me in the face and I gotta take a step back and be like, man, I've really been a jerk.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why, but for some reason I seem to have to keep learning that lesson over and over again. But thankfully along the way, I've collected a lot of really good people in my life who are unafraid to have that conversation with me.
Yeah.
And we have good relationships where I listen to when they're talking to me because I know they really care about me and I know they have my best interest in heart, but I also know that they can see when I've gotten off the path.
See through it, right? It's good to have people like that in your life. And it's good on you as well, and good on anybody listening to this, to listen to people to understand, you know, not listen to people to respond. And with a huge lack of humility, you can't really do any of those things, which is difficult. So, man, I got one last question. If you can get this, if you know the answer to this question, me and you are going to stop what we're doing and we're going to go start a business together. So it's a loaded question, but you got people that listen to this podcast that have never done a deal in their life. You got people that listen to this podcast that maybe are doing 100 deals a month. You got people that listen to this podcast that are trying to figure out if real estate's for them. You got all shapes and sizes that are paying attention to this. And here we are talking about how you did 100 deals a month. What do you say is the easiest way? No, that's not the best way to phrase that question. How do you develop the patience to go from where somebody is sitting at today, maybe it's 0 deals a month, 1 deal a month, to get to 100 deals a month? You combine everything that you've talked about today. Say, all right, Mike, I'm going to grab this and this and this and this and Grant this and this and this, and I'm going to go do these things. We have a very, very real tendency, especially today, to say, all right, I'm doing the work, but it's a month later and nothing's happening. Like, how do you develop the patience to get there?
Well, you hit the nail on the head that it's, you know, a month later isn't long enough. So, you know, when it's 3,000 months later, let's talk. But, you know, success, I really believe in a lot of ways, success is where mindset and effort meet over a long period of time. And so I think about, you know, for most people, the biggest problem I think most people have it's a couple of things. One, it's what they're allowing to go in their head. And two, it's what they're allowing to be their output on a regular basis. So it's the input and the output. And the output, as an example, is the vast majority of agents on this planet do not have what we call a perfect daily schedule that they follow religiously every single day. See, because if you change the habit, you change the result. End of story, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, but to change the habit, you got to believe that it's important to change the habit. And in order to believe that it's important to change the habit, you got to stop listening to the garbage and you got to start only surrounding yourself with people that lift you up and that really are, that are not only motivating, you know, let me rephrase, that are not only filling you with good things mentally, but that also are good examples to you. They say that you're the product of the five people, socioeconomic product of the five people you spend the most time with. There's a lot of truth to that. There was a time in my life that, and this is your long answer to your short question, sorry. There was a time in my life where I was brand new in the business. I was young and I was working 100-hour weeks. I was literally sleeping under my desk. And that was before I worked from home. I was literally in the fetal position 3 nights a week under my desk in my little office there. And I was the top agent in the office, which really just means I was less broke than the rest of them, right? I was still freaking broke. And my parents literally were telling me over and over again, Michael, go get a job at McDonald's. Michael, you got to get a real job. Go get a job at McDonald's. You'll make more money. And the sad truth is they were right. Had I gone and got a job at McDonald's, I would have made more money. But I was not going to fail. I was not going to be a failure. And because every single time they picked up the phone, it was negative, negative, negative. And they didn't think it was negative. They thought they were helping. And I love them for it. I'm not faulting them for this. But I literally had to draw a line in the sand. And I had to say, and I literally told my parents, don't call me, I'll call you. Mm-hmm. And kid you not, I went 10 months without speaking to my parents. And I love my parents. It wasn't about not loving my parents. It was about I had to fix what was being played in my head. And that's when I got a coach and I got my head straight and all of a sudden my business took off.
Mm-hmm. That's powerful, man. That's powerful, powerful stuff. I hope if you're listening to this, you picked up the lessons that I did. I got a book full of notes here that I took while you were talking. So I don't know if you guys learned something today, but I learned something today. So I really, really appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy, but I really appreciate you jumping by here and dropping some truth on the podcast, a lot of stuff that people could take here and go implement in their business, get some results. If somebody did that and they said, man, I got to reach out to Coach Michael. I got to call him. I got to figure out what's up. What's the best way for somebody to connect with you so that they could learn more about you?
I would say just go to our website. Just go to clubwealth.com, get on the blog. We got tons of great free content on there that's really good stuff, right? Like you want to learn how to get 50 to 150 people out to an open house? We got an hour-long video on that and a free checklist you can download. And if you just follow it, it'll work. You know, so just go there, get a bunch of great free information and get to know us. And if after doing some of that, you're thinking, God, you know, we'd like to get to know you on a better level, just ask for a strategy session. You can do it right there on the website. There's lots of ways to connect with us, but I really am a believer that, you know, dip your toe in the water first, just get in there and just get to know us a little bit. Go devour the free stuff.
That's great. Great advice. I appreciate you guys so much for being continued listeners of the Marketing Genius Podcast. Typically somebody asked me about Coach Michael, I would say, yeah, you got to go check him out. He does good stuff. I've encountered you personally a few times, but after this conversation, I think I'm going to 2X my frequency of how I send people over to you, man. I think a lot of you and you guys are doing some amazing stuff in the industry. So I can't tell you enough, you know, just how much we're appreciative you stopped by here. It's going
to
help.
I appreciate that a lot. Seriously, awesome. It's been an honor to have you. By the way, I think I forgot to give them the website. I should probably do that.
Oh, yes. Yeah, probably should.
Like, go to our website if you can figure out what it is.
Yes. Good luck. Yeah, a bunch of people with pens in hand with cliffhangers. Like, what's the website?
Like, what kind of moron blows giving his website out? You're like, who does that? But anyway, it's clubwealth.com. clubwealth.com.
There we go. Clubwealth.com, guys. We'll have that linked up in the show notes as well as other ways you can connect with Michael. You guys have an epic day and we'll see you on the next episode. Peace.
Thank you guys so much for tuning into the Marketing Genius Podcast. We hope you got a ton of value from the show today. Make sure that you rate us on iTunes and Google Play, and we will look forward to seeing you on the next episode.